episode 129 of Futures Radio Show, sponsored by CME Group, the world's leading and most diverse futures and options exchange. CME Group's markets help individuals and businesses around the world manage risk and seize opportunities. Learn more at futuresfundamentals.com.
Every day, traders and investors dive in to tackle the ever-changing markets to find opportunity. Futures Radio Show is your number one source for answers to the questions that all market participants want to ask. Veteran futures trader Anthony Crudele sits down with the most influential leaders and top traders in the industry. Now, here's your host, Anthony Crudele.
Hello, everyone. Before we get started today, I want to thank our sponsors, CME Group and Trading Technologies. Today, I spoke to a man that started as a broker in South Africa, but wanted to move away from the broker business and become a futures trader. He then moved to London to work at a prop firm and is currently a senior trader at Axia Futures. His name is Brannigan Barrett. Brannigan and I had a great conversation today. I asked him about trading technically versus fundamentally, and he explains the importance of volume. He gave his thoughts on why equity markets have been so slow lately, and we talked about the changes in the prop trading business. We had a great discussion on the most important skills and characteristics to survive and thrive in the trading industry. He explains to us why the hardest moments are the greatest moments for growth and reflection. And finally, Brand talks about the mistakes that he tries to avoid as a professional trader. Brand is a super guy who has a great understanding of what it takes to be a successful day trader. Brand and I had a lot in common on the way that we approach the day trading business. You will truly enjoy from hearing Brand today. As always, thank you all for listening. Please enjoy this episode. Bran, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Anthony. How are you?
It's great to be with you today, Bran. I'm doing well, and I'm excited to speak with you today. I've watched your YouTube videos before. I've been following you on Twitter for some time. You always put out great work, great stuff for traders. Also heard you on Chat with Traders. Our friend Aaron, he does excellent work, and I really loved your interview there, too. Can you tell our audience how you got your start in the industry, and walk us through your journey to becoming senior trader at Axia Futures?
Thank you for all the compliments there. It's very simple. Obviously, I was a broker initially back in South Africa trading some of the Rand crosses. Wanted to be a trader, flew over to London with a little bit of savings, and started at a prop firm, sort of learned the basics of it, and this is my seventh year in the prop industry, so it's kind of been one of those where I've made the commitment, I've made the sacrifice, and now I'm in it for the long run.
So I want to pick your brain a little bit about why you decided to become a broker, and then talk to us about the transition from being a broker into a trader?
The broker was very simple. I literally graduated at the height of the financial crisis, so I couldn't get a job in one of our banks. And my dad played golf with the CEO of a treasury outsourcing firm. And he kind of mentioned, my son's, intelligent, loves the markets, always talking about it. And basically the CEO, said to my dad, well, tell him to rock up the next day. And I literally, not even 24 hours later, I was signing a contract with a firm I didn't know much about, but the idea sounded pretty cool. And that's how I got into broking. But I quickly realized that broking is very different to trading in a sense that, you're always trading the book, you're trading by a set of rules, you're trading a process as opposed to your opinion, et cetera, et cetera. So for me, it just wasn't enough. I didn't like the idea of taking orders and not having that discretionary type, role. So yeah, from there, obviously, it was a no-brainer for me just to go straight into prop as a result.
Before we get into some great topics that we have to discuss today, can you just give us a little insight on your primary methodology? Are you technical, fundamental? And if so, what technicals or fundamentals in the markets are you watching?
So obviously, because I'm a bit more of a short-term trader, I know the fundamentals. I always know at any given moment what are the key fundamentals driving my market. If those fundamentals suddenly shift, if OPEC were to come out tonight and say, heck, the deal's off, they're not going to extend for 6-9 months, I know what to do. I'm not going to think, and I'm going to execute quite aggressively in that sense. But obviously, because we're day traders, I'd say we're far more focused on the technical aspects of the market. Me personally, I like positioning in a market. So I like to understand where the positioning is, where it's been created, and try and stick as best I can with the trend, but equally happy to go against the trend. So trade very technically based on the positioning of the market, and just pretty much go with, you know, where that positioning is and go with it until it no longer works and then go against it.
All right, great. Yeah, thanks for sharing. Now, this topic is probably one of my favorite topics to talk about because I feel like I talk about it every day with the traders and in our private chat. And we talk about the current state of volatility in the financial markets. Let's face it, it's been pretty slow in equities. We have moments where it's good, but a lot of moments of when it's really quiet and sitting on my hands a lot. I mean, there's a lot of headlines and reasons for the market to move, but they just aren't. So, Brian, why do you think that is?
I think it's one word, and it's participation. I think, you know, if you go back and just look at a chart of 2013, 2014, and you get the volumes up. Now, you know, for me, volume means business. Volume means, you know, interaction and you know, contracts changing hands. So the mere fact that, I mean, if you look at the E-mini S&P, you know, the largest equity index, you know, we were trading over 2.5 million in 2013 on average every day. You go look at that same daily chart now, and you're going to see 1 million, 1.2, sometimes 1.5. So for me, it's a matter of participation. Now, I think there's a number of reasons the participation has dropped. And I think the first most critical reason is the central banks. I think the central banks crowded out the markets when they started their QE policies. They drove everyone into every possible asset where there was opportunity. And the problem now is that, you know, it's not that necessarily everyone is fully invested. It's just that the risk now doesn't make sense, you know, to a lot of strategies. So by the very nature, I think there's a lot of people sitting on the sidelines, you know, all just waiting. And you know, for me, the volatility will return. You know, it by the very nature of the definition of volatility, participation will pick up, but it's going to require prices to move to certain points. So, you know, for instance, if let's say the E-mini S&P corrected by 20%, I think you'll see those volumes pick up, you know, back well above 2.5 million in the E-mini S&P. So, you know, price just needs to move, and that will drag, you know, participants back into the game. So, you know, that's how I look at it. I 100% agree. You know, you would think, you know, things like a Trump and Italian elections and, you know, the Trumpflation trade, all these things should bring volatility, but they're not. And I think it's because of the nature of what central banks have done to effectively people participating in the markets.
And piggybacking a little bit on what you're saying with participation, I think that tells me a lot, because it tells us that traders are smarter. They're not going in and then we're not overtrading. I know that I'm one of those people who is a constant overtrader. And when volume's down, I've been sitting on my hands more. And I feel like traders have now smartened up. When it does get a little bit slower, they're not coming in and just sitting there trying to make a couple of ticks here and there. They're sitting back on our hands. So I think that also drives the low volatility, because you're not seeing that little bit of slippage of a lot of the day trader volume. Do you agree with that too?
100% agree. And I think what we've found is that, you know, at the moment, if you're playing in these markets, you're playing with a computer. So if you do not adjust, you know, if you're looking for big moves or trend or momentum, you know, when you're playing with computer programs, you're using the wrong strategy in a different market, you know, conditioning. So I think the key to take from that is, yes, sit on your hands, but equally don't ever forget that there is always opportunity. It exists in a different format. So, you know, if you're a traditional breakout trader, breakouts are occurring, but they're not as strong, they're not as forceful, and the likelihood of trend is a lot less likely. So it's not to say that there is an opportunity, it's just disguised slightly differently.
Yep. Now I want to move on and talk about prop trading. I mean, prop trading has been a tough business over the past few years. Have a lot of friends in the prop business. I've seen a lot of firms go under, a lot of point and click traders really struggle. And, you know, I really think it's just because of the changing of times. I mean, we've talked about this: less participation, less volatility, point and click traders with less opportunity. You know, you find it could be a little, it's more challenging. Now, why do you see prop trading struggling the way it is? And talk to us about where you see the future of prop trader going from here.
Okay. I think the first thing to point out is you know, when I started trading, for instance, volatility was at a max. I mean, I started at the height of the European crisis. Now, what that volatility meant was, you know, you could be sitting there and it's Thursday afternoon and you've had four down days in a row, and the next thing, ECB's Draghi comes out and says, you know what, we'll do whatever it takes to save the euro. And the next thing, the euro does 300 ticks. Now, you know, back in the days, you used to get a lot more volatility as well as obviously a lot more, you know, sort of what we like to call free money in the markets. Now, unfortunately, that has dried up as well. So if the first thing is that I think back in the day, you could be a little bit more of a sloppy trader. You could maybe not quite rock up at work at 6 a.m. and you know, do your debriefs and all that in the afternoon, and you could still make good money because there was a lot of easy opportunity back then. That game has changed now. And unfortunately, you know, human nature is that if you made money in the good, easy times, to then adjust and really up your game and become more professional is nigh on impossible. And I've seen so many guys try and they can't adapt, and they're just not willing to adapt. You know, they're not willing to accept that the new norm is guys sitting from 12-hour shifts, you know, at the top of their game. So I think that's one of the important ones. And also the costs. I think, you know, the cost of day trading, you know, it still is relatively high. And I think that's squeezed traders out. You know, not many people can sit down at a prop firm now for 6 months or 12 months, you know, just to start breaking even in the trading game. So, you know, traders at the moment, you know, they're just not willing to make that sacrifice. And unfortunately, the markets just aren't allowing, you know, traders to get off to that very strong start that we saw, you know, for instance, when I started back in 2011. So I think those are two of the biggest pitfalls. But on the plus side, I think where retail traders are really lucky is that, you know, if you look at, you know, some of the brokerages now, they, you know, you can get, you know, trading technologies, you know, platforms for next to nothing. You know, I mean, these are software, you know, platforms for execution that used to cost so much, and now they're available to the retail market at a fraction of the cost. So I'd say the one positive is that costs are coming down, and that's probably the lead on, you know, to your second question, which was, where do I see the future? Well, I think the future will always exist for prop firms so long as the individual prop firms are willing to adjust to the times. Now, what we're seeing, you know, particularly what we like to do at Axia is that, you know, if there's a trader who's new and he's young, well then we're going to accommodate him in that sense. We're not going to put him on, you know, a TT professional platform that's going to cost $1,000 a month. Rather, we get him a cheaper platform so he can survive. He can stick it out and hang around for long enough to actually learn the game. So, you know, I think the prop firms that are willing to adjust, not be stuck in the old ways, will survive. And I think the second most important thing is, you know, traditionally prop firms were always good at very specific strategies. Now, you know, you look at the City of London, some prop firms do spreads, some prop firms do outright German bonds, some prop firms, you know, do oil calendar spreads. Now, traditionally, that used to be fine because you didn't need more than one strategy. Now, I think the prop firms that have got the most diverse, you know, experienced traders with different strategies that trade different products, I think those are the prop firms that are likely to be around 5, 10, 15 years from now.
Yeah, I want to comment on a couple of things. First is, of course, I agree with the technology and how much it's gotten better and less expensive. I remember when I first started, we had a choice to use CQG and Bloomberg. I had to have a clerk, even though I was trading on the floor using, you know, trading the E-mini S&P, I still needed to have a clerk. The cost from payroll and everything was so high. And then I've seen every year really it come down, the technology get better. So you're getting better tools, better resources. Now, I mean, you could use the Reuters Zenith and you can get news, and it's not as great as a Bloomberg, but you can get really great stuff on there.
$100 a month.
$100 a month.
And, incredible.
You know, I love it. I use it, and I think it's great. Where, you know, I don't know how many years ago that started, but, you know, it wasn't so long ago where that was really unavailable for a retail trader. And I think that I think a lot of what we're talking about is traders are getting more sophisticated on the retail side. They're able to come in and use better technology. And the guys like myself, I consider myself not an older trader, but I've been trading for, gosh, it's been 18 years. I've had to adapt so many times along the way that I really, my worst moments came after my biggest successes, because after those moments, I didn't want to adapt right away. I didn't want to change. And fortunately, I made enough when I was doing really good to be able to afford time to be stubborn, but then eventually adapt again. And I think that that's really one of the big things in this industry is that as time goes by, and you said it, and I'll say it again, staying in the game is everything. When you bring a new trader in, the key is to get them to exist long enough to see how things are going to change, get them ability to learn something, get some things, you know, under their belt, and to eventually be able to you know, start using, like you said, the TTs and the better resources out there, and then, you know, they can extend their career. It's so important to be able to stay in the game as a new trader. I completely agree with that. So I want to move on and talk about, we talked about prop trading. So I guess a good follow-up would be, what skills and characteristics do you think are required to survive and thrive in the prop industry?
It's funny. I think you've mentioned the first one, and the most imperative one is time. You know, if you're not willing to give up 2 years of your career or your life to learn to trade, don't even bother. You're wasting your time. You know, so for me, 2 years minimum, you need to see it out for 2 years to know whether or not you love it enough to stick it out, you know, to know whether or not, you know, this is the kind of job you want to do, you know, in the future. So first is time. Second is bankroll. It's no secret. It's no surprise. There's a very high correlation between, you know, traders who come from money and, you know, traders who succeed. So, you know, if you do come from a bankroll, or you have someone that can take that financial pressure off you, or you can live with mom and dad, you know, whilst, you know, learning to trade, you know, do it. Take the pressure off yourself. You know, don't be ashamed. You know, you make the sacrifice today for what can only be considered as the most incredible, you know, freedoms in the future. Then the third, and this is probably something that I think is absolutely crucial to the success. And again, it's not necessarily a skill, but it's a strong environment. You know, I've always been lucky to have been in an environment where I had guys that were not just, you know, fantastically good traders, but they all had different skill sets. You know, some were scalpers, some were swing traders, some were, you know, fundamentally strong. Some, you know, you were amazing breakout traders. So I got to see all different variations of trading within one environment. Now, why that's fantastic is because you have this constant feedback loop. You know, imagine a comment comes out now and I'm particularly weak at it. I don't have to sit and think about it, you know, and figure out how I could become better. I can simply just go to the guy who's good at it, and, you know, he can kind of guide me through that. So, you know, being in a strong environment where there's experience helps so much. Then something again that's, you know, I think you need a bit of luck. I think anyone that says, you know, trading is gambling, to an extent it is. You know, everything is a 50-50. The market can only go up or down. And you need that little bit of luck. And I can tell you categorically, I think I've been lucky about 5-6 times in my career where some really crazy things could have gone wrong, you know, where, you know, through a bit of an error from my side, leaving an order without a stop, I got filled, and the next thing I was handsomely onside. You know, I mean, these things have happened to me. You know, I've clicked and markets have done crazy things before, you know, and I've been lucky. So I think luck is crucial as well. And then probably the most important characteristic. I know a lot of people talk patience and discipline and, you know, all these sorts of things. And yes, those are important. But I think one of the most important is the ability to keep things simple. You know, I think one of the biggest mistakes traders make, including myself, is we complicate things. We make up all these wonderful stories in our head as to why the market could go up, could go down, why it's doing this and that. And in essence, you know, the market has a binary outcome. And, you know, it's one of the things I firmly believe. The market can only go up and down. You know, so by that very nature, if you're able to simplify, you know, the process of trading, I think you'll be, you know, 100 steps ahead of everyone else who, you know, starts the game of trading.
You nailed that, Bran. Loved it. Now, I just want to say one thing to all those traders listening out there. That's not just for prop traders. That's for all traders. And just to bring in my personal experience a little bit here, at the beginning of my career, it took me a couple of years to get going and to start making money. And I really felt that I was fully prepared when I began to trade. And along the way, as I started to struggle, I was hopping around, you know, learning different types of indicators and styles. And it really screwed me up because I was going from trading market profile to trading candlesticks to trading all sorts of different indicators, MACD, and then eventually started developing my own indicators. And along the way, I continued to trade and really just got myself chopped up and more confused than anything. And I always believe from that experience in my life to really spend the time, invest the time before I invest the capital, because during that time, I was trying to figure out who I was as a trader. And at the same time, I was losing money and basically stealing my future away from me. And by the time I was actually getting ready to finally become the trader I knew I could be, after all the experiences, I was out of capital. So I think, you know, it's very important you're very fragile at the beginning of your career to invest that time before you invest that capital. That's why I like traders to go to prop groups or to get into good communities to help mentor them to get to that position to when they're finally really ready to go at the markets, that they're not, you know, burned out of capital and mentally a lot of times too. You know, you need to have, I know that when I went through that, I was kind of felt like I was barely standing on one leg when I finally had my last bit of money to finally be able to see if I could turn this around. So great topic to discuss today, Bran. Really enjoyed that.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I think in this day and age, you know, the millennial generation was born into social media and free information and YouTube. And, you know, we've got so many different external variables coming in, so many different sources of information. You know, where do you look? And the simple answer is, look, you know, for me as a mentor, and when I say to someone, you know, or I mentor someone individually, I say to him from day one, I'm never going to teach you to trade. You're going to teach yourself to trade. I'm just going to point you in the right direction. I'm going to show you a few things and you're going to adopt things that make sense to you, you know, to your personality. At the end of the day, I can only guide you. I can only show you the ropes. At the end of the day, you've got to learn it for yourself. And, you know, the ones that are willing to learn it for themselves that accept that are the ones that make it. You know, the guys that still go to these seminars, and, you know, that believe someone can teach them, you know, the 10 strategies that will make them successful, it's just not going to work, because trading is a personal endeavor, and that's the key to it.
Absolutely. Now, you said to me that the hardest moments are the greatest moments for real growth and reflection. Can you talk to us about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've always, you know, once it was a CNBC, interview that was done, and I think it was George Soros that got asked the question, and, you know, the interview lady said to him, you know, so, you know, what are your greatest achievements? You know, when are your greatest moments trading? And he said, well, you know, the times that I lose are my greatest moments. And she looked at him really sort of almost, you know, not sure what to say, and said, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, you know, in my life, in my career, I've only ever grown when I've been through the hard times. And, you know, if you think about that statement, if you actually stop and really think about the hard times you've had in your, you know, in your life, in your career, whatever it may be, you'll very quickly realize that when you have those hard times, you're actually forced to reflect. And when you finally stop and reflect upon your life and your career and all these things, that's when you actually start to sort of see real growth, because then you're forced to make change. You know, if you're making money every day, you know, then you're never going to, you know, make any changes, because why would you? But the minute you go on a horrible run, the minute, you know, your career is potentially about to end, that's when you're going to have to make the hard decisions. That's when you have to, you know, look inward and say, well, what the hell am I doing wrong? And, you know, how am I going to correct this behavior? So, you know, I think that's something that sits very close to me. Now, you know, I look at the perfect example. Very early on in my career, you know, I remember it was the end of 2015, and I was literally at the peak at that point in my career where, you know, I just clicked and I made money. It felt like that. It felt like every day I was in the zone. Every day, you know, it felt easy to me to trade. And I went out to South Africa. I changed my environment for 3 months. You know, I thought I had this thing buckled down. I started rocking up at work, you know, maybe 20 minutes after the open, you know, half an hour after the open. And, you know, it was a wonderful sunny afternoon. It was the ECB rate decision. And the next thing, you know, all hell broke loose. I was on the wrong side with all in pretty much on the wrong side of the market. That then volatility stopped. You know, short story is, you know, I don't even know what percentage of my account I lost, but it was the biggest ever down day I had. And I didn't know what to think. I didn't know what to do. And so I let it go. I accepted it as part of the game, and I didn't reflect. And, you know, I kind of just thought this is a one-off. I blamed the market. So there was an element of unluckiness, and I thought, you know, it was down to being unlucky that I'd taken the hit. 1 week later, the South African president, Jacob Zuma, then fired the finance minister of South Africa, and I had a carry trade on, which I'd had for almost a year. The currency depreciated 15, 16, 17% within minutes. I didn't have a stop in. And that was pretty much almost my entire account gone. You know, call it 3-4 years of work within a space of a week. And a lot of people that know me personally know this story. It's something I don't mind sharing with people, because there's a very, very hard lesson to learn in this, is that, you know, at no point must you ever feel like you've made it. At no point have you ever made it in this industry. You know, as quickly as you can make money, you can lose it. And, you know, when I took that second hit, that's when I actually finally sat down and said, let's reflect, you know, let's look. And you know, the perfect example with the ECB, you know, I looked into it and I realized that I was completely over leveraged in an illiquid market. So liquidity can be a premium, you know, at a premium, you know, over an ECB. And I didn't factor that into the analysis and, you know, the preparation, and that cost me. You know, the same with the carry trade. I didn't ever think an emerging market could move like that. And, you know, I didn't have stops in. And so there was so much to reflect on. And I, you know, what was really hard was then I had to sort of say to myself, well, what do I want to do? Do I still want to be a trader? Do I still want to do this stupid job? And it took me, I mean, it took me probably 6 months to recover and to find the confidence to voice my opinion again and say, you know what, this is what I feel, this is what I'm about. So I was forced into a corner. I was forced to reflect. I was forced to grow from that experience. Now, the most important thing is, one, of course, I've learned the lessons from those 2 days. But more importantly, I've learned a bigger lesson, which is that, you know, one moment, 1 week will never define my career. You know, I know what my career is built on. I know what, you know, my relatively small success has been built on. And I can always lean back on that. I know I'll always be able to find that little bit of success so long as I stick to, you know, whatever it is that I do that makes me money. So, you know, self-reflection is so crucial. And, you know, the more you can do it, it doesn't just have to be times when, you know, when times are tough, you know. So, yeah, that's kind of it.
Man, that hits home with me. I could tell you this, in my career, and I really probably didn't really realize this until right now. I mean, although I, you know, subconsciously probably did, is that when I was reflecting, some of the greatest things happened to me from those moments going forward. And I talked about myself and how I said my worst moments in trading typically have come after my best moments. And it was because I didn't reflect right away. And I never really thought about that until now. And it was really because I was stubborn. Ego got in the way. I was a big trader, making a bunch of money, young. Like, who's going to stop me, right? And next thing you know, you're blowing up your account again. And you're just like, I cannot believe this is happening again. I thought that I've gotten past this. And you said something that I 100% agree with. And I think that every trader that doesn't agree with this at some point will, is you've never made it in this business. Never. You have never made it. This business is about constantly adapting and evolving with it. Man, I really enjoyed that, Brand. That was awesome. And I want to end today's show with talking about the biggest mistakes for traders to avoid. You know, seeing how I shared some of my mistakes and I've made pretty much all of them, and I'm sure I'll continue to fight my bad habits as I still do to this day, and I know that you've made your share of mistakes as well. I really can't get enough of successful traders talking about what mistakes to avoid. So my question to you is, what mistakes do you try and avoid?
Well, I think the first thing is underactivity. Now, that's not for a new trader or an old trader. That's for every trader. You know, being inactive in the market is never a good thing. You're going to be learning so much more being involved in the market. Now, again, I know that's almost counterintuitive to what every trader says, you know, where you got to sit back and wait and cherry pick, but you're only going to learn about the markets, about the nature, about the feeling of the markets by being in the markets. Now, there's a way to obviously manage your risk. You know, if you're feeling out a market, you don't do it with the same kind of risk. You cut the risk back, and that's how you manage it. So for me, underactivity is something you want to avoid, and even more so when you're young. When you're a young trader, you have to learn and experience. So the only way you do that is by clicking. Leverage in futures. Okay, I think one of the biggest mistakes, you know, or not just futures, but leverage in general, people don't understand leverage. They use leverage when they're in trouble and when they've lost the plot and they've lost, you know, consideration of why they entered in the first place. But ultimately, you know, leverage is a tool to be utilized when the odds are in your favor. You know, so if an outcome is 90% likely to occur, that's when you use leverage, not when it's, you know, you're going further and further offside and, you know, the probability of ever coming back is 20%. So, you know, utilizing and understanding what leverage is something to definitely avoid. And then something, you know, that I tend to avoid as much as possible. And I made this mistake yesterday. That's why it, you know, came to the top of my head is fading the train. And what I mean by the train is when there is, you know, clear initiative being taken by the buyers or by the sellers in the market. And there's real clear, you know, intent to go in one direction or the other. You know, don't even entertain the other side. You know, you don't be afraid if, you know, your order book says, you know, you only bought the market all day. That's cool. You know, you don't always have to be on the other side of the market. Now, you know, I tend to find when I have, you know, when I avoid that single mistake, I tend to trade very successfully because, you know, if there's a market with initiative, with intent, so long as I'm not fading it, I'm probably going to be making making money. And then, you know, something again that hits me personally a lot is not having a process in place. So, you know, having a very exact approach to your day from the time you enter the office, the trading sheet you complete, you know, the number of hours you trade without even listening to a phone call, without, you know, talking to someone, you know, those, you know, that's all factored into a process of how you approach your day, you know, to how you end the day, you know, the debrief, the strategy analysis, all that stuff. You know, if you don't have a process, if you're just rocking up, clicking, hoping, you're doing exactly that. You're hoping and you're gambling. You know, you're not going to make, you know, a future of this at the end of the day. So, and then the last one is, you know, the minute you think it's easy, you know, that's the trap that a lot of guys make. You know, they think it's easier. They suddenly, that idea of getting rich pops into their head. And suddenly, I mean, you're a mile offside, you're averaging, you're breaking every rule, you know, in the book. So for me, so long as you can always, you know, keep a strong focused approach, you know, and really just, you know, make sure you're doing a professional job. I think ultimately, if you avoid those mistakes, you should be okay.
One thing I want to comment on before we get into rapid fire questions is how much I've learned from a one lot. I've learned how to hold trades longer. I've learned how not to fade markets. Like you spoke about when the market just looks like it just wants to go one way and it's doing it. You step in with a one lot to go with it. You know, when I get into a position, even to where I've had, you know, 50 contracts or multiple hundreds of contracts on, I take it down to a one lot. I've learned how to hold that one lot and then slowly inch my way into holding a bigger position. You know, for me, I love how you said, and it's something that I never really, I've never really said to myself as part of my rules is to not stay active, but it's funny because I actually do that because I do put one lots on just to stay sharp, to feel what's happening. Or if I see something that's happening that I don't understand, sometimes I'll put a one lot on just to go with it, or I'll put a one lot on to go against it, just to kind of feel it. And it's amazing that, you know, even though a lot of what I'm looking at is based off of a system, I will look to see if I want to step in with my strategy and go with or against that based upon a little bit of a feeling, so I have my discretion over it. Great stuff today, Bran. Now, I've got some rapid-fire questions for you if you're ready for those.
Yeah, go for it. Let's shoot.
All right, everyone. Our rapid-fire segment is sponsored by Trading Technologies. Trade the global markets from virtually anywhere with TT, the world's fastest commercially available futures trading platform. Create your account and try it now free at tryttnow.com. How has your trading evolved over the years?
Well, yeah, three major setbacks. But fortunately, I've always been able to recover and hopefully onwards and upwards and no more for the setbacks.
Can you tell me the moment that trading just clicked for you?
It was 2013. It was Italian election. And I came in that morning pretty much as a graduate, had too much leverage, but took the risk anyway, sold the open, reflected strategy, a massive alert. P&L, ended up making zero. But I realized that day and age that this game is all about leverage. Everything in trading is about leverage ultimately.
What's the number one source you spend your time on?
Trading Technologies, CQG Charts. So Trading Technologies, as you mentioned, it is the number one for professional traders. We all use it for good reason at the end of the day.
What's your favorite book about trading or the markets?
The best book ever, The Greatest Trade Ever. All about John Paulson. They made a movie about it. But John Paulson was an absolute legend during the sub-mortgage crisis. You know, he took on the entire market, you know, but had to pay a lot of money to take on his trades. And even though when everyone was against him saying, you're wrong, 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 he hung in there. So if you haven't read that, it's Gregory Zuckerman, The Greatest Trade Ever. Fantastic book.
What's your favorite movie or TV show about trading or the markets?
I'm going to go Wolf of Wall Street. Just everything about it. It's funny. It's brilliant. It's just an incredible movie. So yeah, Wolf of Wall Street.
What's the best piece of advice you've received about trading or the markets?
There is no right or wrong in the markets. Only high or low probability. Never think right or wrong. It just makes you too rigid. You know, you want to be flexible. So everything's about probabilities. You can do the wrong trade and make money. You can do the right trade and lose money. So just think probabilities.
If you can give a piece of advice to the new people interested in getting involved in trading, what would it be?
Be objective as possible. Always be objective in your approach, in your analysis, in your execution, in your understanding. So long as you're objective, not forcing your opinion on the market, but rather trading what the market is showing you, I think you have got a future, you know, in trading.
Now, Brian, if you weren't a trader, you'd be doing what?
This is going to sound crazy, but I always wanted to be a National Geographic scuba diver. So I just want to go underwater and take loads of videos and... I just love the water. I think I was born in water. And I mean, anytime I get to be in the water, I'm in the water, but I just don't have my camera. So when I blow out of trading, I'm going to become a National Geographic diver.
You know what? That's so funny you say that, because growing up as a kid, I'm not sure how old you are, but I remember like we always looked forward to magazines. And I remember when somebody came to our house and I was pleading with my dad. I'm like, I want this Natural Geographic magazine. And I remember when every one of them came with that yellow border around them, and I would open them up and I would look at every picture. And still to this day, I always watch all of those under the sea movies and everything where they like they go in and they're always recording under there. I always find that to be fascinating. That's definitely a first on this show.
I didn't think you would have heard that before.
No. Well, Brian, I got to tell you, I had a great time speaking with you today. This was a lot of fun. I know you're a busy guy. Before I let you go, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, you know, get yourself in a good trading community. You know, there's a couple of them, you know, especially the ones that do the free, you know, sort of education. You know, education should not be paid for. You know, the more you can follow people who are willing to give their time and show you things, you know, those are the kind of communities you want to be a part of, you know. So, you know, we're so lucky, you know, traders, you know, at Axia Futures, we are an incredible community. We've all known each other for 5, 6, 7 years, you know. So if you're not following Axia, you know, please go on YouTube, loads of videos there that you can learn, you know, real trades that, you know, that we do day in, day out. Learn from those trades and you know, add them to your arsenal. And yeah, hopefully you can all become successful and you know, continue to grow as traders.
Where could they find you on Twitter?
At Trader Bran. So yeah, and the most important one is obviously at Axia Futures. You know, make sure you're following them. You know, they put out some incredible things. From, you know, every time when there's a central banker speaking, we post what that central banker said the last time. And you know, every time there's an important data piece coming out, we're posting those key, you know, reference points. You know, really, you know, important things that traders need to be aware of. So you know, make sure you're following at Axia Futures on Twitter. Very, very beneficial.
Yeah, 100% recommend following both Bran and Axia Futures on Twitter and going to check out their YouTube videos. They do excellent work. Bran, thank you so much for coming on Futures Radio Show today, and I look forward to having more conversations with you in the future.
Thank you very much for your time, Anthony.
Thank you for listening to Futures Radio Show. If you have any questions or comments for myself or my guests, please visit futuresradioshow.com. and sign up to be a premium member for free. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.